This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Fly ball, left field, hit well. Friel going back, still going back. It is gone!
They got it!
This may be the loudest I have ever heard Comerica Park. A two-out solo home run for Curtis Granderson.
Swinging a fly ball center field. This is deep. Granderson is going back at the fence. He leaps, and he made the catch! He just saved the game! Granderson took a two-run game-winning home run away from Grady Sizemore.
That's in the air to right field. Granderson is back at the track, at the wall, leaping, and he made that catch. Granderson timed it perfectly.
That is a great montage to introduce our next guest here on Rahimi and Harris with Russ Dorsey sitting in for Marshall Harris. He is a Chicago man. He is a 16-year veteran outfielder in Major League Baseball, a three-time All-Star and analyst for Major League Baseball on TBS as well. Curtis Granderson, it is always great to see you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. And that hype-up video was amazing. I need to have you on my team.
Robbie would love to do that, I'm sure, because he
grew up a
fan.
Yes, I would definitely love to do that.
Yeah. Please do. That was awesome.
I saw you snap the pic, and I know you grew up a big fan, Robbie, so this is a good moment.
Oh, he's living in there.
Yeah, to be quite honest, like 10-year-old, like 9-year-old me is like having the time of my life right now. So I'm happy you're here.
Thank you. Always good to be here.
See, you're always for the kids, even when you're for the former kids. But I know that's why you're here. You are so well known for your work in the community, giving back to, I also think, like the history of baseball. You recognize it in so many different ways. And this is a really interesting idea. You are involved with the National Sports Collectors Convention, and you're launching a Youth Collector Clubs initiative. And this is a really cool concept. It's a big convention in Rosemont. It comes every year. You know, the National Sports Collectors Convention. This year, it's July 30th through August 3rd. And in combination with your Chicagoland Baseball and Education Academy, you're doing the Youth Collector Clubs initiative. And financial literacy is something that we all say we should have learned so much more of in school. To have this concept, tell us how this is going to work.
It's really exciting. As a UIC grad, I was a business major, and one of the courses that they offered was entrepreneurial studies, you know, creating your own business. That was in 2002. Fast forward to where we are now, starting your own business can happen in so many different ways. And partnering with the National with sports cards, that's what I collected when I was a kid. And it's on the rise now, and you can get into this business in so many different ways by following your favorite teams, your favorite players, your favorite leagues, and it can be introduced to kids of all ages. And now you don't have to open up a sports card shop out of your parents' garage or down the street at the local mini mall. You could do it from your phone. And the cool thing about it is all these skills will transfer into life. You get to see the value of your card go up and go down. When to sell it, when to buy it, what's hot, what's not, and all that will transfer into housing market, stock market, your life in general. So super excited to partner with the National, who's going to be here in Chicago for 3 years in Rosemont for their collectors event every year. So all the big collectors are going to come out. But even if you're not a collector, you're just a sports fan, you can go out there and see some of the biggest and brightest fan players that have ever done it. You're a Cubs fan, PCA is going to be there, Nico Horner is going to be there, Pedro Martinez, one of my favorites, is going to be there, CeCe Sabathia just got put in the Hall of Fame. So you don't have to be a card collector to go to this event. But if you're there, you can get a chance to meet them, get some autographs, also pick up some cards along the way. And we've also partnered with Pristine Auction House. They have a live auction that's going on right now until August 4th. You can catch those details on our nonprofit website, cbeauic.org, to see what you can bid on, and all those proceeds help to fund this program.
I think it's super cool when you talk about collecting, because it seems like an activity that can connect generations, right? Older generations to younger generations. And we're starting to see, you know, I go into clubhouses and guys in the big leagues are collecting cards now. I know Justin Steele here with the Chicago Cubs is a guy who has really gotten big into collecting. But for you, as a parent, and we're in that day and age of screens where kids are on screens a lot, how is this something that can help, you know, the youth continue to move on of something outside of a screen?
Well, I think we also have to embrace the things that are there. The screen is not going away. So how do we utilize that screen to the point of a question that I get asked all the time by a lot of kids? How much money do you make? And a lot of parents and teachers say, don't answer that question. And I go, I'm going to answer that question.
Yeah.
You never know what that kid's motivation is. If that kid is like, I'm trying to make money and this is a way I can do it, I want to learn more, I'm going to give it to you, especially when they hear the numbers that can be done there. Of course, you're not going to start there on day one, but something that's really cool that they've done with the National is they challenge these kids. They give them $1. Tell them you get a card, you have the whole day to see if you can trade up, keep trading up to get the most valuable card by the end of the day. Some of these kids come out and they've made a $100 investment off of that one card. Now, is it going to be life-changing for them? No, but it's going to be exciting. Go, wow, I can do that today. And with my device, with that screen, I can sell tonight. I can keep up. I can see the value of how things are moving up. So I'm all for embracing the things that are there versus saying, you know what? Let's put it down all the time. But they will, because they're going to have to open up their packs from time to time. But they can also film themselves doing a pack reveal and partner with siblings, partner with families, partner with neighbors, all those different individuals just to keep it collective and exciting at the same time.
I also think it's important to have that real interaction with people. You know, that's what a lot of this becomes. Like a convention, you're meeting a lot of like-minded individuals. You're not just there to necessarily get autographs. You're also there to talk to people who maybe have the same interests you do. There's a lot of that in here when you talk about pricing strategies, decision-making, how people talk to people. Those are skills that I think we used to think are automatic, but for kids now, that's not necessarily the case.
Think about negotiations, right? If you want to figure out the salary of your job, your house, your car, whether you're buying or selling it, I wasn't necessarily taught that. You were put in there and you figured out on the fly. Here's a great chance for kids in their teen years to figure it out versus the first time they do it, making a big life-changing decision, you know, on what their scholarship looks like, what their house looks like, what their car looks like. And all of a sudden they make a bad decision because no one taught them, where we can make a little mistake on a sports trading card. Like, oh, I have a Juan Soto that's a Yankee card. I thought the value was going to hold when he got traded to, or when he signed with the Mets. I sold it too soon. And now I found out. I learned on the fly. And all that stuff can continue to build in them. And they can learn so much more than we could at that age, with something so cool and so fun as trading cards, something that I collected as a kid and my parents still have to this day.
Was there something for you as an athlete where people, you know, try to come up to you, hey man, I got this idea, this business idea. Was that something that you always wanted to do, knowing that, okay, I'm going to have an opportunity to do some things and make my money work for me as an athlete? Or is that something that as you got into the big leagues, like, okay, maybe I should start thinking about this a little bit more?
There's a lot of ideas that come at me and they continue to keep coming. I think that comes with the territory. I think the biggest thing that I've learned across like my time as a student athlete and in the professional ranks is, okay, what information are you giving me? We all got great ideas. Yeah. I got a bunch of great ideas too. But also, what's the backdrop that you have to help support that? One of the first investments I did was with the 50-50 group here in Chicago. And when those two individuals, Scott Weiner and Greg Moore, came up to me, it wasn't people that said, hey, I know how to make a good pizza. They said, I've served, I've managed, I've hosted, I've cooked, I've cleaned, I've worked at Gibson's, I've worked at Hugo's Frog, I've worked in Vegas, I've done all these things. So the criteria matched, and I said, I can get behind that. But you'll be surprised at how many of those opportunities come at you and say, hey man, I got this idea right. for some chicken wings and they taste real good. Have you cooked them? Nope. Have you ate them? Nope. But I know a lot about chicken wings and I need your money to do it. And I'm like, no. You have to learn that along right. the way, you know?
Yeah.
We are happy to talk to Curtis Granderson, the 16-year Major League veteran, taking his time here with us on Raheem and Harris on the Score with Russ Dorsey, talking about giving back to his foundation, the Chicago Baseball and Educational Academy, with the Youth Collector Clubs Initiative. And I love how you talk about collecting baseball cards. I know my most valuable card that I ever had, at least to me. Do you guys know yours? I want to go around the horn.
Yeah, I got to hear yours first. Let's go.
Paul Molitor rookie card.
Oh, that's a nice one. I like it.
For me, that was as good as I got.
You know, you mentioned something about people coming up to me. I was a big Ken Griffey Jr. fan, but the one card that eluded me while collecting was the Upper Deck Rookie. And somebody heard me say that, and instead of them asking for an autograph, they actually gave me that card. So I got that card late in life, like in the last 5 to 10 years, even though I was collecting Griffey's back in the 90s. So that's got to be my most valuable one.
What'd you do with it?
It's framed. It's in a little case, and my parents have it. They're actually cleaning out some stuff right now. I've just pulled all the cards. They're at home, so it's somewhere in that pile. I just got to filter through and pull all my Ken Griffey's, and my second favorite was David Justice. Those two are the ones I probably have the most of.
I didn't have a valuable card like you guys had. You guys were more fortunate than I, but I remember the day I pulled a Barry Bonds card as a kid watching Barry, wanting to be in the big leagues, and it was just like, I don't care what the value of this is, I got a Barry Bonds card. And it was so cool because I was locked into baseball anyway, and collecting was something that kept me locked in, where now my career is baseball. Like, your career was actually playing in the big leagues. And I think it's really cool to see how that small thing, like collecting, could be a lifetime of memories for somebody.
And it's cool just the things that you like. Like, I was a big basketball. I mean, got Chicago basketball, you know, MJ in the 90s, who couldn't be? But I was also an Alonzo Mourning fan, right? I have no affiliation to Georgetown or Charlotte, but I liked him, I liked his number, and I got a bunch of his cards, you know? Jerry Rice, you know, Joe Montana, Randall Cunningham. You know, I still had a jersey from Randall Cunningham, partly because of collecting the cards first. Then I remember being at Marshall's, and all of a sudden there was a Randall Cunningham jersey on the rack. I said, Mom, I gotta get it. And I had that, and then we didn't frame it or keep it. We went outside and played in it. So all of a sudden, it's tackle football in there. Mom's yelling at me because I got grass stains all on the new jersey we just bought. But hey, I wanted to try to be like Randall that day. And all that stemmed from being a fan of the sports cards of it.
I love it. I feel like that's how a lot of people were. Like, we didn't frame a jersey.
No.
We were out there wearing them to school. Did you have the Georgetown starter jacket then? You're of that era.
I did not have a Georgetown starter jacket. These are the two that I did have. I had, for some reason, that one that everybody had, that Charlotte Hornets one. I don't know how that ended up everywhere, but right. I had that one. And then randomly, I was a big Buffalo Bills fan. I had a starter pullover Buffalo Bills jacket. And how I became a Bills fan, I don't know. It was that first Super Bowl that they lost with the wide right. And I became a Buffalo Bills fan ever since. So Don Beebe, Thurman Thomas, Cornelius Bennett, Andre Reed, those were my guys. And those were other cards that I collected along the way.
I love the connection to the memories.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's super cool. Everybody knows you as being a Chicago guy, but more specifically, you're South Suburbs guy.
Yes.
And Linwood, I'm a Park Forest kid myself, and it's so cool because a lot of areas around Chicago get a lot of notoriety, not as much the South Burbs. And Layla, when Curtis was in the big leagues and I'm growing up and seeing, oh, this dude from Linwood, like, that's great. And went to TS South, I went to Ileana Christian.
Yeah, right there.
Right across the street on Torrance. It's super cool to see guys from your area. Who are the guys from the South Burbs that you knew of where you're like, oh man, this dude grew up right around this corner from where I did?
You know, it's so cool when you have these players you've heard about, they become mythical. They become like these iconic figures because you've heard about them, but you didn't necessarily see them. So yeah. Cliff Floyd was my guy. Cliff Floyd is at Thornwood High School, and the stories are he hit the ball out of the baseball stadium over the football field, and that was a normal thing. Now, I never saw it, but those were the stories and the images you had. So when I finally get a chance to meet Cliff, and I was like, that's one of my idols, right? That's who I wanted to be like. He's a left-handed hitting outfielder from the South Suburbs like me, and here's my chance to finally get a chance to meet and connect with him. So he was one. Mark Mulder, another one from there, another big name that ended up pitching and doing some great things. And again, just the basketball side of things. You know, I played against Eddie Curry. I played against D. Wade. I played against Corey Maggette and Darius Miles and Quentin Richardson. And I thought I was a good basketball player until I played against them. And I realized I was a better baseball player than I was a basketball player.
That's awesome. Like, I played baseball with Mark Mulder's nephew at Ileana. And Cliffy is the best. Man, for everybody out there, Cliff Floyd is elite human being, fun dude, stories for days. And we're about to do a show for MLB Network last year. And we're talking about basketball. And he tells me, I didn't know this at all, He was supposed to be part of the Fab Five class at Michigan.
He can hoop.
Layla. Like, I'm serious. So him and Juwan Howard were boys. And Juwan said, well, I'm bringing you wherever I go. Because Cliffy could do everything.
Yep.
Like, a lot of these guys, just great athletes all around. And they were taking visits, and Juwan decides, all right, I'm going to go to Michigan. Jalen Rose, all those guys that were up there. And Cliffy ended up getting drafted in the first round to the Expos and not going. But Cliffy was going to be a part of history in Michigan.
And you know what's crazy? He's not the only one from that South Suburbs that was just multi-talented. Him, Antoine Randall-El, has a Super Bowl, was also drafted in baseball, and also played, was All-State in basketball. You know, Ty Streets was another guy. Melvin Eli, that whole Thornton class was there. And I always highlight and bring those names up because when you look at where we are today with parents trying to figure out what's the best things for their kids, I'm always going to point at play as many sports for as long as possible. It's going to translate. Look at this last year's or this last month's draft that happened a couple weeks ago. The first round were mostly shortstops. Why were they mostly shortstops? Those are the most athletic positions on the field. They can move around everywhere. And if you look at all the top players that have played, Aaron Judge played football. Mike Trout played football. Jacob DeGrom had a basketball scholarship. Like, the best players on the field tend to be the most athletic. So why not play all of them for as long as you can? If baseball is the one, if football, if basketball, the cream will rise to the top. Like for me, baseball was my sport. You see how tall I am. I was not going to be an NBA guy, no matter how big my hoop dreams were. But I thought I could, but I played that. I ran track. I bowled. I ran cross country. I did it all, and it all helped my major league career.
Love talking sports, giving back in life with Curtis Granderson. He is kind enough to give us a second segment here on 670 The Score. So I want to get into a little bit more about what your foundation does, because I think it is so important. Just helping people, especially right now, to talk about charity and giving really means a lot and is a great contrast to what we're seeing. So we'll do that next. Ask him some baseball questions too. But Curtis Granderson, kind enough to join us here, in Rahimi and Harris with Russ Dersey on The Score. We'll give you more coming back after this.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And Granderson hits it in the air. Down the right field line. 12 to 4.
Happy to be joined by Curtis Granderson in studio for another segment. This is Rahimi and Harris with Russ Dersey on 670 The Score. And Curtis is here promoting the work of what his foundation, the Chicago Baseball and Educational Academy, does for their kids. Thanks in part to the big National Sports Collectors Convention in Rosemont that's going on July 30th through August 3rd. That organization does a lot for the community. I love this part of it. Our hook is sports and baseball, but education is the focus, offering free year-round opportunities to children from under-resourced neighborhoods, college readiness activities, career exposure, leadership and workforce skills, social emotional learning, which I think is really huge for kids now, and 35 free clinics annually for skill building, health, and mentorship. What has this done to help these individuals?
It's been so inspiring, because when the idea came to build the stadium at UIC in 2015, I said, hey, I'm all for helping the university go, but this has got to be more than just a baseball field, because the season's only so long. Can we open this up for the community? And UIC said, absolutely, let's do it. So not only do we have the stadium, which I argue has the best view in all of baseball.
Absolutely.
So if you haven't been there, definitely come on out and check out the stadium at UIC. But we also have indoor, large, full, major league size infield on the indoor side. And the great thing about it is, when I was younger, baseball wasn't a year-round activity. It is now, and we all know it gets cold here in Chicago. So to have indoor space available, and there's only three large spaces in the city of Chicago, we're the only one that offers it up for free. So the cool thing is, we have baseball and softball, ages 8 to 18, on campus year-round. And while on campus, they're getting also introduced to all these other things, whether it's a campus tour. Some of them, it's their first time ever stepping foot on a college campus through CBEA. Some of them are going to get out there and get corporate views and interviews, we've partnered with EY. So they got a chance to go and see what it's like to get into that space. The social emotional learning part of it. We've talked a lot about the youth, but if you are a parent and you drop your kid off and you stick around, you're going to get it as well. And it's been eye-opening for them because some of these parents also have to realize how their actions are affecting the kids when it comes to the different activities. Are you that intense parent? Are you a little too much? Do you need to just pull back and let your child guide that ship when it comes to how they're feeling about this sport? And having somebody there like Dr. Wickesser, who has graduated from Michigan State to provide that information for these parents, has also been eye-opening. So it's been a combination of a number of different things, just getting these kids out there with the idea first being baseball and softball, but adding all these other different things to it so they can take that home.
Philanthropy has always been something that you cared about and giving back to people. And even with all your accolades, the Roberto Clemente Award is something that, you know, really means a lot to you. What was the point, whether it was before you got to the big leagues or even in life, where you said, okay, if I get to the level I want to get to, I want to give back?
You know what? If you look back, if you were a student athlete at the high school level, part of your responsibility, you were supposed to have your community give back piece, whether it was a car wash, whether it was a canned food drive, whether it was a food giveaway. Like, that was part of your requirement to be on the team. Mm-hmm. Some people didn't take it as seriously as others, but I remembered those. And I remember going to homes and handing out turkeys. And this one lady one time answered the door and she said, "How come you're at my house?" I said, "Hey, we have something here for you." She said, "Is this for me?" And it was a turkey and it had all the sides and the trimmings and everything. And she said, and she started crying. And I said, "What's going on?" She goes, "I wasn't sure how I was going to feed the family for Thanksgiving." And that was something that always stuck to me, even as a high schooler. So as I got to college at UIC, it was the same thing. We did different things throughout the community. Then as a pro, it just became part of what you do. So in 2007, I started the Curtis Granderson Foundation, the Grandkids Foundation. And it was all about, again, continuing to get kids active, showing the importance of education, partnering with Mariano's to help fight food insecurity. So it's just kind of always been around me, but I think it goes back to just being a student athlete, and that was part of it. So for all the parents listening and all the students out there, don't forget that's part of your responsibility as well.
Well, that empathy goes miles. We love talking to you about all of the different ways you're inspired, and thank you for sharing that with us. Now I have to get to a rough question that was suggested by your associate over here, Chris. The question is, ask Curtis about his UIC basketball career.
So my basketball career was this close to becoming a reality. I had hoop dreams, like I told you. I wanted to be a Division I college basketball player. And the legendary coach, Jimmy Collins, is the reason why I signed at UIC to play baseball. Coach D, the baseball coach, had set up a meeting with Coach Jimmy Collins and said, "Hey, just give him a chance to try out for the team. That's all I wanted. Tell me I'm not good enough, and I'm good with that." So Illinois State was recruiting me, and they told me, "No, you only can play baseball." So I said, "All right, I'm out." And it came down to UIC in Northern Illinois. And once they got me the meeting with Jimmy Collins, I said, "I'm coming here." So Jimmy Collins had me work out with the basketball team. I was like, "All right, I think I can hang enough." Now, mind you, they have Martell Bailey. They have Cedric Banks from Westinghouse. This is one of the best point guard duos in the city, in the state, are also incoming first-year students with me. I know I'm not going to play over them, but I could potentially be on the team with them. And John Schneiderman had just won the three-point contest down at State. So these are the three that I'm going up against. But if I can just be that 15th person on the team, then I count this as a success. So the next day, I have fall baseball practice. I'm going to finish that and do my first official basketball practice. I break my thumb in the baseball practice that day, and that ended my hoop dreams. I come in, tell Coach Collins,
man,
broke the thumb. That's as far as it got. But so keep in mind, close. I mean, those UIC teams were good. They went to the tournament 2 out of the 4 years I was a student. They even got a 12 seed 1 year. So I wasn't going to play, but I just wanted to be on the team. That's it.
At what point did you realize that it was okay? Like, your baseball career paid off tenfold, but when were you okay with that?
I loved baseball as much as basketball. I just thought that, man, if I could do that, that would be great. Because keep in mind, I'm already here on a baseball scholarship. Like, I'm doing that. But it's like, if I can do that and the basketball side, that would be the icing on the cake. So as soon as I broke my thumb, I remember coming in. I sat down with Coach Collins. I said, thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Let me just focus on baseball. And literally, it was like that. Hmm. And I had to obviously rehab my thumb. Then the baseball career ended up taking off from that point.
I want to ask you about a guy that you had an opportunity to play with as a teammate, but is also being inducted at Cooperstown to the Hall of Fame this weekend in CC Sabathia. I've gotten to know CC after he was done playing, but as a guy who played with him and against him, in your eyes, did you always know, okay, this is one of the best pitchers I have ever seen?
Well, again, going back to another conversation, CC Sabathia had a football scholarship, so another dual sport athlete, and played basketball. So very athletic, very intimidating, because he's a big individual. He's like 6'6", 280-ish pounds, depending when he was pitching. And he's standing on the mound with that hat cocked to the California left-hand side.
That Vallejo came out.
It came out. It had to let you know that Bay Area. And he would stand on there with that physical presence. And he was one of the players that showed his emotions. So if he struck you out, he pumped you up. He dropped a couple F-bombs. He did all that stuff on the field. So physically looking at him, he had everything. And then, of course, the numbers backed it up. Mm-hmm. Cy Young, winning championships, strikeouts. He also hit and hit home runs. So when you look at the number of left-handers that have slightly better numbers than him, they're Hall of Famers. Then you look at left-handers whose numbers aren't as good as his. Some of them are Hall of Famers. I'm like, oh, he's a shoo-in. So to the fact that I heard some people say, well, he may not get in, I'm just so happy that he was a first ballot and he's going to get a chance to go in. And just a great individual, father, teammate, athlete, just so cool to get a chance to see that happen.
Do you think we're ever going to have another 3,000 strikeout pitcher again, speaking of CC's numbers?
So we have, I think, two close. It's Garrett Cole and...
Is it Sale? Off the top of Sale.
So Sale's obviously, you know, the older of the two, so that's going to be a challenge. I think that the issue is going to be you need length and you need volume.
Yeah.
So if you're Garrett Cole, you got to drop a couple 200 strikeouts in there, what, three, maybe four more times. Not to say that it can't be done, but got to stay healthy in order to be able to do it. And you got to be on the field in order to do it. And you still got to get strikeouts. Especially now, even though strikeouts are going up, more players are swinging early in the count. So they may just put the ball in play a little bit more. So I don't know if we'll get to 3,000. I think a lot of these records that we've seen are going to be really difficult to break, especially when you look at what needs to be done. Like, look at 700 home runs. I think Giancarlo Stanton is the closest right now. He's still like 200 away. That's a lot of home runs. And he's not getting younger. Father Time is undefeated in this game. So if you take a Bryce Harper or even a Mike Trout and go, okay, they're about 400 or 500 away. So we do the math. Okay, they need a couple 10 seasons in a row at 40 apiece as they get older and older and older. So at 35, 36, 37, 38, and that's where the challenge comes in, I think.
And you think about a guy like Hank Aaron to get to that number with no 50 home run seasons, right? is insane. But we were talking about, you know, the deadline coming up in 10 days. It's a lot on the show today. What teams might do what? Some of the best teams in baseball. From a player's perspective, you're week 10 days away from the deadline. I think to that 2012 team that you guys had in New York that ended up in the ALCS. When you know that the team is good enough to win the World Series and you're looking around like, all right, well, there are additions coming in, like, what is that mindset like a week before?
It's nervous, it's excitement, and it's something you really can't control. You continue to go out there and keep playing to give your team the pressure to make the move that they should be making, whatever that happens to be. But then you're still in the dark. They don't come down and talk to you and say, hey, you know, what do you think we should get or who do you think? Occasionally, if you've been there for a very long time, so I assume Derek Jeter was probably, you know, approached and said, hey, we're thinking about acquiring this player. What do you got on this player? So they may have asked him, but I don't know. That's just me speculating. Mm-hmm. I was never asked on any of the teams that I was a part of. But, you know, that stuff happens and then you see it and then the deadline ends and either you thought you made a lot or you didn't. And probably the biggest one for me was in 2015. We're with the Mets and we're waiting and we're getting hot and the deadline ends and nothing has happened.
Yeah.
And then they announced we traded for Yoenis Cespedes and we go, okay, Did this just happen? And we're literally about to go on the field for batting practice to start our game that day, but it hasn't really been announced. So we've also seen the flip that I told you about with Wilmer Flores thinking he got traded and he didn't. So we didn't know if it was true or not. And sure enough, Cespedes comes in and boom, we take off and we end up in the World Series in 2015.
I think that's a really good example because you had so many other years in your career to back it up with, oh, hell, this is happening. And then also the excitement that was in New York at that time that year, because I was working part-time at MLB Network at the time. And I remember when the Mets are good, Yankees, I feel like, is a different vibe in New York, but when the Mets are good, New York is a different place. It sounds crazy if you don't know, but I feel like the vibe was very different that year. One of the first that the Mets fans felt like they were really in it.
It is, and if you go around New York around the marathon time, which is in October, I'm staying on 67th and 1st, which is on the Upper East Side. It's like mile, I think, 20 of the marathon. And I got to get some food before the game. So I'm going to get some food. Everyone's running. They got their gear on. They got their outfits. And it's like Mets jacket, Mets hat, Mets jacket, Mets hat. And it's everywhere. And I'm like, okay, did everyone just have these in their closets and pull them out? Where did everyone get all this Mets gear? So when I signed with the Mets, fans there told me, the comment that I said that everyone got on me for was that true New Yorkers are Mets fans. This is something I heard. This wasn't something that I was assuming. But when I heard that and then I saw it play out, like there are a lot of people that will come to New York and go, oh, I got to get a New York hat. I'm like, that's a Yankee hat. It is very iconic. It is very popular. But if you see somebody with a Mets hat, that is not an accident. That is purpose. That is somebody in that family going, I've been a diehard for very long. So when those fans said our team is good, we're going to let you know and we're going to show it up. Chris Rock is out there and he's celebrating and all these celebs are coming out and the place was rocking. It was a fun time to be there.
And I guess you even see with another teammate of yours, David Wright, with the reception he got this weekend, getting his number retired. And people will say, David Wright didn't win a World Series. He wasn't an MVP, not going to be a Hall of Famer. But you see that reception for a guy that was the original Captain America, you know, the World Baseball Classic. And you can kind of see what you're talking about in terms of like how New York treats guys that play for the Mets.
Yeah, you know, there's so many iconic players that they love and get around. Doc Gooden and Daryl Strawberry both played on both teams, and they're loved by all the fans out there. David Wright, to name one of my favorites, Big Sexy Bartolo Colon got to do it on both sides. And if you go out there and you can produce and play in one of the most difficult markets in sports, I think they respect that. I think they love that, and you'll definitely be treated as such and get a response like David Wright got.
This has been a wonderful time, as it always is, talking to Curtis Granderson. Thank you so much for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And again, to mention again, to learn more about that auction that he talked about helping the Chicago Baseball and Educational Academy, you can go to CBEA, so that's the acronym for the academy, UIC like the school, CBEAUIC.org. The auction that is fundraising is currently underway. It ends at 9 o'clock on August 4th. And then additionally, check out the National Sports Collectors Convention, July 30th through August 3rd. That's talked about a lot, and it's in Rosemont, as it usually tends to be. Anything else you want to let them know about?
Hey, this is a great cause. What a better way to start a business than by collecting cards. So help support CBEAUIC.org.
The man is always for the kids. We have some Bears news coming up. Apparently a big name receiver made a visit to Hallis Hall. So we will get the latest on that. And thanks again to Curtis Granderson for joining Raheemi and Harris on 670 The Score as you're listening on the Odyssey and iHeart Radio apps.
Layla Raheemi, Marshall Harris, Raheemi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Greeny Sutton from the 41, long, with time, throwing deep, has a man and he's got a touchdown! DJ Chark on the receiving end, 41 yards.
This is Raheemi and Harris on 670 The Score. We are still glowing after talking to Curtis Granderson. Russ Dorsey is in for Marshall Harris, and we have a little bit of news. This, according to Ian Rappaport, we'll call it breaking to shout out Wildfire. Breaking news on The Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. Remember how we talked about which position group you were the most confident about?
Yes.
Well, I don't know that the Bears are as confident in their wide receivers because reportedly, according to Rap Sheet, Ian Rappaport telling us that DJ Chark is visiting the Bears and that it has already happened. That according to what we are seeing now online. Chark, okay. The notable 28-year-old wideout who has had injuries previously in his career, I feel like maybe what is the ideal use for him? What would be the scenario there? But I don't necessarily mind it. There are a lot of big names who are still available, like Keenan Allen, for example, Amari Cooper, and you knew that they were going to sign somewhere eventually.
If you needed a guy to be a number four on your depth chart, like you could do worse than DJ Chark, a guy that's been around the NFL for a long time, still has some skills. So, sure, yeah, like that's fine.
In 7 games last season, as we mentioned, injury is a concern. 7 games last season with the Chargers, he had 4 receptions for a total of 10 targets. But again, still a name where you're paying attention when you hear.
You're not
that
saying
news.
Be an impact player for the Chicago Bears next season. It's like, hey, be a veteran in the receiver room that has experience, can run the entire route tree, and you know, just be another option for Caleb.
That's right. And like we said, the injury just caused him to only play 7 games, 31 yards total, 105 offensive snaps. The year before with the Panthers, 35 passes caught, 525 yards, and 5 touchdowns. The better question is, why are the Bears talking to him? Because as we said, it's not like you don't have a lot of people we're already discussing. Mm-hmm. DJ Moore, Rome Odunze, we assume, is the number 2. You would think in this scenario, Luther Burden. Olamide Zaccheaus is only a special teams guy then? Like, is that what the...
No, I mean,
thought he was supposed to be a slot person too.
Yeah, if Zaccheaus is, let's call him the number 4, just because we believe that the skill set for Burden makes him the 3rd best receiver in the room, then that would make DJ Chark your 5th receiver on the depth chart, which, once again, totally fine. Like, you could do a lot worse than DJ Chark as your 5th option for your wide receiver group.
We haven't even talked about Tyler Scott, too. He's also there as well.
What does he do? Tyler Scott.
I don't know.
In my mythical offensive plan for Tyler Scott, I didn't want him to be the guy who you tried as a third round or as a third down guy, even though that is his, you know, you tend to do that when you're trying to move the chains. I always thought he was your go route guy, take the top off the defense, run away from people type of dude. That's what his film at Cincinnati would have led you to believe.
He was definitely supposed to be the go ball down the sideline guy, and then it didn't happen, and then there were drops that happened where you're like, he started to slide down the depth chart, and then you didn't see Tyler Scott anymore.
But here's the thing. This is what happens when you have a different head coach. You're going to have that coach say, I can't work with X, Y, or Z. Or in this offense, this person is not as good of a fit. And it's not necessarily about what they've done. It's not necessarily about what their skill set is. It's about the fit.
Yeah.
It's a skill set relative to what you do offensively. And as much as we talk about Ben Johnson being able to do anything offensively, create something where there wasn't something, you are seeing some specific prototypes when you consider he drafts Colson Loveland and says he reminds him of Sam LaPorta. You know, that gives you an indication. We've talked about how we think DJ Moore should flourish in this because he is a man who can have multiple skill sets. He's a yak and rack guy. We've seen him play
St. Brown role.
Exactly.
In this Bears offense.
Yeah. So once you visualize that, then how are the other role players mixing in? So I think it's good that we mentioned, like, oh, by the way, Tyler Scott, so where is DJ Chark fitting in all of this?
Is DJ Chark your Josh Reynolds, right? You saw what the Lions did with Josh Reynolds in the offense. Like, Robbie says no.
No, I'm more of like, I hate Josh Reynolds with everything. I mean, if he caught that pass in that NFC title game against the 49ers, the Lions would have won a Super Bowl. So hearing that name just like PTSD triggered.
Robbie, I appreciate it, but there were a lot of coaching decisions made there where, you know, everything is 4 downs to Dan Campbell. It didn't just come down to that.
No, that's the scar that's the deepest in me. Josh Reynolds, I hate you.
I wanted to get to something I saw on the text line. This question's for us. Did you go to Cornerstone Christian School ever? My mom taught there for 30 years and mentioned that you did. Yes, I did.
Oh my goodness.
I did go to Cornerstone Christian School in South Chicago Heights. Shout out to the Crusaders.
Also, amazing that we got this confessional when we were talking about the greatness of Cliff Floyd and telling stories with Curtis Granderson. I was the pitcher Cliff hit the home run off of. I would tell HF, Homewood Flossmoor. What? My friends make fun of me to this day. I had two strikes on him. And then there was another text that got cut off by the text line. Here it is. It rattled around the bleachers in the football field.
Like, people people who tell that story, man, they say Cliffy hit an absolute tank as a teenager. And that's why you get drafted in the first round out of Thornwood High School.
Can you imagine? You've just seen Cliff Floyd, who you already knew had a reputation. Like, when he walks up to the plate, you're like, ah, crap.
Yeah, large human.
And then he hits it, and it goes so far. And then you hear the sound of it rattling.
Yeah, the rattle. It's as a kid, too. Like, okay, I have to pitch against what will likely be a first-round draft pick. I give up an absolute tank to that guy, and then everybody knows I did because they can hear the clank off the bleachers.
And are you all still standing there just in awe of what just occurred? Like, everybody's frozen, and they hear, like, this.
Right. You know, the HF fans are like, wow. Like, you're like, whoa, you're supposed to be cheering for me, not this guy.
Oh, I can't even, like, I admire you for admitting it, Texter. I think that's pretty cool.
I think that is cool. In, like, the grand scheme of things, you see what Cliff ended up doing in life, and... Yeah, that's a guy that played in the big leagues for a long time, hit a lot of homers, and you could say, I was part of the story.
And I think that's that could be like a possible fun like sports group topic, you know, brushes with greatness. Like, were you in the gym when you saw like the sickest dunk from a high school player who ended up going like to the NBA? You know, I do love those type of stories. Or you were the one who gave up one of the most epic home runs in Chicago high school baseball lore.
Yeah.
I love that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. Like, that story about that Cliffy told me that he was supposed to be part of the Fab Five. Like, you hear Fab Five, and you're like, yeah, that's one of the biggest, I guess, teams across sports in college athletics. And he was like, yeah, I was supposed to go up there. I was going to be the sixth man on the Fab Five.
Cliff, he is part of that group of people who were, like, 10 to 15 years older than me. They're like, for all we laugh about, like, people complaining, whatever. There's a group of people that were like 10 to 15 years older than me, really like 5 to 15. And I just thought that they were the coolest individuals. They like didn't care about anything. They were naturally successful to us. Like, you heard stories about them that age group for me. Cliff like definitely fits into that.
Great storyteller. Some of the best stories that Cliff has ever told me cannot be shared. And those are always the best.
But if you're just saying hi to him, there's a good chance you might be part of something just special in conversation, and he doesn't know you.
He says, I love this about him, if something is good, he'll be like, oh, that's the real deal Holyfield right there. And where are you going to find that verbiage in 2025? Like, I love Cliff Floyd. Cliff Floyd's the best.
He pulls off everything, too. Like, yeah. Just he makes everything look cool. Kind of like Curtis.
Big know? Wine guy, big cologne guy, Cliff Floyd.
I love it all.
I'm glad this is turning into the Cliff Floyd show.
Yeah, appreciate our baseball peers and our baseball slightly older than us, like the dudes you look up to. Yeah. That's kind of how I feel about
yes.
it. Yes. That would be calling Cliff Floyd old, and I don't want to do that either. Because that man definitely looks like he could still play.
1,000%.
Which, we have an alert from the text line. The Royals have just called up Rich Hill, according to many of our texts.
Okay.
Yeah, according to Bob Nightingale, he'll be starting for the Royals against the Cubs on Tuesday. So tomorrow, Rich Hill is back.
45? Is he 45 right now? You knew once he was going to sign with the team. It was only a matter of time.
Yes, he is 45.
Yeah.
So when I was,
always love it when somebody older than me is still playing
when
baseball.
When I was growing up, Jamie Moyer was that guy.
Yes, he
that
was.
Well, I think Jamie Moyer ended up being 48 the last time he
49.
Pitched.
49.
There you go. And me and my dad would be watching games. It's like, here comes Jamie Moyer. He's been pitching forever. And I wasn't at the time. I didn't know how old Jamie Moyer was. And then you realize, you're like, but why Jamie Moyer? And that's my question with Rich Hill. It's like, hey, man, you've had a long career, done well. Like, why?
Because they can.
All right.
I get it.
I don't, but okay.
Some people like work. They like working.
That's fair. If we just take the sports element out of it, some people just like working. Maybe that's retail.
The same texter just texts, help. Okay, I'm sorry. We meant to mention this earlier. So thank you. We'll be on the lookout. Also, what does this mean for Seth Lugo? Yes, obvious question that I think is fair to ask. We are horribly late to break, but hopefully that means that our friends Lawrence Holmes and Matt Spiegel have gotten to chat with Curtis Granderson. So I don't mind it. They join us next here on The Score.